Welcome to the Coach Lalisa Show. We are here to coach you to your success, to coach you to your purpose, your passion, and your destiny. Tune in each week, Monday through Friday morning, for a lesson, a tool, or a tip or strategy on how to dig deep past all the things that are hiding the true you. Find out not only who you are, but exactly what you ought to be doing in your life, where you should be going, and how you should be getting there. Well, I am Lalisa J. Williams, your coach, and I am honored and grateful to be here to assist you. Stay tuned for the next 30 minutes and enjoy the show. You can contact Coach Lalisa after the show via the internet. You can visit the website www.lalisajwilliams.com, or for free coaching sessions just for you, go to www.mylifecompass.com/Lalisa Williams. Now I want you to sit back, get that pen and pencil out, get ready to take lots of notes. We got activities lined up for you. Get ready to go to another level in your life. And don't forget, invite a friend tomorrow. The show is going to be awesome. And now, Coach Lalisa J. Williams.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome, welcome, welcome to the Coach Lalisa Show today. Well, I am so glad and so excited to be here yet another day, yet another day. We do, however, have a lot that's going on. We have some great things that are happening, some very positive and wonderful things that are happening. But I'm going to be teaching this morning a little bit about endings, E-N-D-I-N-G-S. How do we end something? Why do endings for some people seem so hard and difficult? You know, some people have a hard time transitioning in their lives from scenario to scenario, from situation to situation. You know, some people just have it hard to make changes. Well, they're not alone. They're not alone. There are thousands and millions of people who are in the same category, in the same boat. Some people, they think that end means lose or failure. Final. So we're going to be here today. We're going to teach you how to end properly. How to end properly. That's end a marriage, end a relationship, how to end one period in your life, go on to a new period, a new era, a new season, how to end one career and start a new one. We're going to talk this morning about endings, and we certainly want you to call into the show if you have any questions. You can call in today. Today is Tuesday, March the 22nd. So we're into our second day. For many of us, we're into our second day of spring. Yesterday, we were into our first day of spring, and it sprung in with snow. That was cute. I thought that was cute. Wow. You know, that happens every now and again. And we say, in like a lion and out like a lamb. So, since we're just coming off winter, that was our last season. It ended. And now we are starting a new season, which is a beginning. But what about your life. How do you handle endings and beginnings? So we're going to talk this morning about endings. Now, originally we were going to have a guest on this show. That guest could not be with us. And you know how we do here? We make all adjustments. We are probably, the show is flexible, as all shows are probably. However, I do Coach Lalisa, just so that you'll know. For some of you, you do know this already. Some of you don't know. If you had ever been my employer, you would definitely know it. And possibly my husband, he probably knows as well. But I pride myself, and not with the kind of pride that God would resist. God forbid we have that kind of pride. You know, we hear the word pride, and most of us, we cringe. And yet we say, I'm so proud of you, or I'm so proud of my children. But inside, we sometimes twinge, feel a little conviction. But the God, because we know God resists the proud. Mm-hmm. So we use that word very, very sparingly. We try not to use it so much. So in using it, I want to make sure I give an explanation of it. And I guess what I'm saying is that on purpose, I purposely try to be flexible. That's, you know, everybody has their brand. Everybody has a brand, right? We talked about that some time back, a few months back, last year. I actually did an online seminar on personal branding at work, which I will do again. But we all have a brand of some sort, whether you know it or not, whether you're trying to or not. And I have this brand called flexibility. That's part of my personal brand. Like, you ought to know what's part of your personal brand. Part of my branding, and there's some other parts to the brand as well. Some parts we want to change. But one part of the brand that I don't want to change, I absolutely don't want to change, and that's being flexible. When I remember working at Continental Airlines, and that was one of the my workplace brands there on that job, and probably all of my jobs, except for the early days when I didn't really know much about myself. You know, there are a lot of people like that. They don't know much about themselves. So I didn't know much about Lalisa then, but today I do. And when I discovered that that was part of my brand, I was able to portray it even more so. And I actually love that part of my brand. There are things that I don't quite like, but that one I do. I like being flexible. In other words, you know, my boss, she would come to me that morning and let me know that they needed some people to help out with recruitment, because that's what I did there, and they may need help in Atlanta, in Miami. Well, one time she told me they needed help in Las Vegas. But I was flexible enough to rearrange my personal life schedule and get myself booked on a flight and get out to Las Vegas, whereas other colleagues could not do that because they had, one lady said she had a dinner engagement and a show to do in New York with her husband, and she could not change for anyone. She was not flexible. The other person didn't want to do it because they didn't care for being told to do things or asked to do things at the last minute. They felt that that was a sign of unprofessionalism, poor management, and things of that nature. So I got an opportunity to go to Las Vegas to help recruit, man the recruitment table. You've been to job fairs before, I'm sure, and you know the vendors, the employers are there with their table, and you come and sign up or give them your application or your resume and do like a little tiny mini interview right there on the spot. Well, I had to go to Las Vegas. I said, fine with me. Hey, they put me, I had never been to Las Vegas before. They put me in first class. So I had a wonderful flight with all the great food. This was back in the, this was before 9/11, when first class was like really, you know, you were throwing down if you were in first class. So here I am, an employee. I'm flying to Las Vegas. Everything paid for. I'm booked, ready to go, right? And I'm going to recruit pilots because recruitment session was at the OBET, the Organization for Black Pilots. The Organization for Black Pilots Association or something like that. And that was amazing right there in and of itself. So here I am in one of the hotels there. I don't remember which one. And this is where we had, and we were there for maybe like 3 or 4 days. So I remember the plane lands in Las Vegas. And so when you hear me say I was in Vegas, it was not to gamble per se or to take part of the nightlife. I was there as a recruiter with Continental. And the plane landed, and I remember looking out of the window. I believe I was on the right-hand side of the plane. What do you call that? That's the starboard side, because, you know, you got the port and starboard side. So I'm sitting on the starboard side of the plane, and I'm looking out of the window, and you can see from the airport, like, you know, the all of the hotels and the strip, so to speak, is like basically in the backyard of the airport, and then you can just see the whole. And so I thought that was amazing. Had never seen anything like that before. And I remember when we got off the plane, I almost melted. It was about 120 degrees because the activity, the event was sometime in July. So here I am. Now, all the way down on the plane, I was sitting in first class. I was sitting next to the Beast. I don't know his real name, but he's a wrestler. I don't know if he's still a wrestler, but he was a wrestler at the time. And he lives in South Jersey somewhere. And he was my seating partner. I was sitting next to him. And then, of course, the whole way down, he told me all about his life as a wrestler, how he got involved. And he showed me wonderful pictures of his wife and his family and his home, and told me all about Monday Night Nitro or something like that, some kind of wrestling match that takes place on television that I knew nothing about, but it was interesting. And then he invited me to come to the MGM, where they were going to be wrestling, and Hulk Hogan and the whole gang was there, right? So I said, okay, yeah, maybe, whatever. But he said, well, come, you know, you can be my special guest, you know, I'll let you into the back, blah, blah, blah. Well, anyway, so here I am down there in Vegas, and we are recruiting. This is what my flexibility got me. So I'm here at this hotel, and I'm talking to pilots who are trying to apply for a pilot's job at American Airlines. I'm sorry, Continental. Well, there were other airlines there as well. I mean, all the major airlines were there, Continental, United, U.S. Air, Delta. They were all there. Well, as you know, United and Continental are one now, but this is when they were not. So all the major airlines were there. And so I'm, you know, networking a little bit, but not as much. At that time, this was 1998, I had not quite started, or I may have just started my MBA, so I really wasn't thinking of my business, you know, my training company. I had not formed that yet. God had not given me that idea yet, so I was networking, but not very much. But I thought it was interesting that here I am, you know, high school dropout, you know, from the ghettos of Cincinnati, lived in the projects a couple times here and there, and here I am standing at the hotel interviewing pilots. I mean, you know, come on. You know, I barely know how to ride on a plane, let alone fly. So I had to learn all about the qualifications for pilots. I had to do a quick study because I needed to be able to talk to them and, you know, look like I knew what I was talking about if we were going to hire them. Of course, you ask all the standard questions. Why do you want to work for this company? And what experiences and do you bring to the table? And you know, what things have you done in the past? What's your level of education? How many, you know, flight hours have you had and things of that nature? So that was pretty fun. And there I was meeting all kinds of pilots and all black because this was a Black Pilots Association. So, of course, I was all astounded to see so many black pilots and things as we would say. So, anyway, it worked out pretty well. I had fun. So that was one time that my flexibility got me something very nice. Oh, by the way, I did go to MGM, and I did go to my first live, full-fledged wrestling match where Hulk Hogan was there running the show, and he is certainly a character with all of the we will rock you thing, and the Kiss band, or one of those bands, was there playing live, and I just... it was the most amazing thing that I've probably seen in my lifetime, because I had been to many concerts with the Delphonics, all the Whatnots. I've been to see the Whispers and many, many other groups. I've been to see gospel groups like Yolanda. I've seen Yolanda Adams and Donnie McClurkin. I've seen CeCe Winans and all kinds of gospel people, right? It was my first time in my life ever seeing a rock band. I mean, full-fledged. You know, the Kiss band, I mean, one of the most powerful rock groups out. And what a show they put on. I can't even describe all that took place on that stage. Well, which was the wrestling ring is where they performed right there. Now, anyway, that was one time that I got something great or did something interesting by being flexible. And another time I was very flexible was when they asked if I could go and help recruit for mechanics, because, you know, the airlines, that's one of their biggest jobs is mechanics. You know, you would think it's the person working at the ticket counter. Yeah, that's important. As you can see, they have kiosk machines now. You can check yourself in. And then baggage, you know, now you can check your own bags even. Get the little sticker, throw it on the little weight thing or whatever. So, you know. But here I am going to, but mechanics, they still need human beings for the most part to, you know, fix the planes. By the way, which I was a jet mechanic in the Navy. Now, that was years before this opportunity for me to be flexible. And so here I am. Of course, when I was in the military, I got out. I never did anything with that training that I had as a mechanic. However, that was 1980. Now it's 1998, 18 years later, boom, here's an opportunity to remember everything I had learned about being a mechanic, a jet mechanic. So they have me fly out to, this time, it was Hawaii. So here I go. Again, they had come to some other people. Well, no, by this time, see, what happened was they said, okay, Lalisa has been flexible in the past. She's, you know, put her own personal life, you know, to the side to do work for the company. Now we can go to Hawaii. She's going to get to be there for 5 days. She's going to stay at the Hilton in a, you know, $150 a night room right on the beach of Waikiki. Let's go to Lalisa versus even going to the other people. And so, of course, I said yes. I'll never forget it. So here I fly to... I've never been to Hawaii in my life. At that point, I had only been to California once, and that was also with Continental, to go to a seminar. But here I go to, again, this whole flexibility thing. So I go to Hawaii. Again, they put me in first class. So it's a 10-hour flight, a straight flight. There are you can do flights that are they stop along the way. But Continental does have a straight flight to Hawaii, but straight flight. I think, did we stop? I don't think we may have stopped in California for a minute, but we went straight through. It was a 10-hour flight. So here I am in first class, and I mean, now we're living large because we're like on a big seven, like a 777 or something, because, you know, Continental was first to come out with the 777s, and those plays were nice. Oh, it was awesome. This is back when Gordon Bethune was the CEO, and I mean, he was rolling in dough, let me tell you. Stocks were trading at $60-something dollars a share. I mean, Continental was booming during this time period. And I just thank God, because prior to me coming to work there, the stocks were trading at about $4 a share. And the company actually was doing the worst it had ever done, and they were about to close Continental about 4 years before I came to work there. So I just, and then, you know, after I left, 1 year later, they went into 9/11. So, you know, God, I'm telling you, he will position you, believe me, you, like you can't imagine. So I come to work. I never worked in airlines in my life. I come to work there for a span of time when the company was booming. I mean, the profit-sharing checks were coming, the parties. We were flying down to Houston every other month, living just really good with the airlines during that time. So anyway, so we fly out to, so I'm on first class. I mean, after a while, I got a little annoyed, believe it or not, because I was trying to sleep. It was a long flight, and I wanted to sleep. And they kept waking me up because in first class, they have all these little things they do with you. From entertainment, every 5 minutes they're bringing you hot sundaes, fresh cashews cooked right there on the plane. All the chefs on the plane for the first class people, a chef on board cooking fresh salmon, steaks, you name it, whatever you want. And the stewardess kept waking me up, and I'm like, ma'am, would you just leave me alone so I can get some rest? But here's the thing. Every time they woke me up to eat, I ate. I wanted everything they had on that plane. So, again, I get to Hawaii. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Can't even describe how beautiful it was. And it was just very powerful, very beautiful. And I did a lot of things. I went to a luau. I went on a little cruise on this little boat-like thing or whatever. And it was great. It was great. And so I'm out here to help recruit mechanics to come work for the airline. So we were talking to a lot of military people, because there's a lot of military bases in Hawaii, and which I didn't know at the time. And people get out of the military, they need jobs. And so if they were mechanics when they were in the military, they would try to, the first place they would want to work is the airline. And the airlines would want to hire them because why? They already have a ton of experience with working on airplanes. So we were there to recruit, and that was really fun. And we had to man the tables, but we had a crew with us, so we didn't have to be there all the time. And my boss told me, okay, we need you to work for 3 days, but you can take an extra 2 days, and we'll pay for your hotel room, pay for your meals, and you can stay 2 extra days to tack on to it, to make it really, you know, the airlines was always doing stuff like that. And they're still a great company to work for. So anyway, those are two major, major things that I've done where flexibility comes in hand. So think about that in your life. I don't know if you want to brand yourself that way or not, but being flexible, I mean, that's just, I could sit here and talk for days about companies and things that I've done that was flexible and how it afforded me opportunities to do things that other people don't get a chance to do because of their inflexibility. So think about that the next time you are, you know, not very flexible on things. You could be missing out. And, you know, I'm not just flexible at work. I try to be flexible other places. Like, for instance, some of you know I'm also a gospel minister, and I minister in my church. And I'm flexible there as well. So, again, I'm gone a lot, yes, but I'm very flexible. So, again, the pastor where I serve doesn't have to call me 6 months ahead of time and ask me to preach. He knows that he can call me the day of. He knows that I will go and prepare a sermon. I'm very flexible like that. Any group there knows. So that's just, you know, how I do it. And again, now, there are some tenets to being flexible. Again, you know, you don't You're not flexible if you're going to get up there in front of your audience or on your platform or, you know, get somewhere and say, oh, well, you know, I just found out about this, or, you know, they just told me today that I had to speak, so in case I leave something out, it's not my fault. That's really what it sounds like you're saying. When people get up there to speak or preach or whatever they do, and they start out by saying, well, you know, I just found out that I had to do this, or I was just told, and all of that, it sounds like you're saying, I don't know what I'm doing. I may make a mistake, but if I do, it's not my fault, because it's someone else's fault, because I didn't have time to prepare. So, you know, it is what it is. Now, that I don't do that, so, but some people do. But I am a speaker as well, and I've been trained as a speaker, and I've been to many speaking seminars and workshops, and I have several books on how to be a speaker, and I watch videos all the time about it. And I was involved in Toastmasters and other programs like Toastmasters, and that's what we teach people, and that's what I was taught. You never apologize about speaking, period. You just don't apologize. You never apologize from your pulpit, so to speak, from your platform. And another thing you won't hear me do, you won't hear me apologize for having a cold. There's no need to do that. You know, people say, oh, you got to forgive me, I have a cold. Well, number one, I don't have to forgive you for having a cold. It's none of my business whether you have one or not. I can pray for you if I so desire, but you didn't need to tell me you had a cold. I can sense that. If you keep blowing your nose, it's either you got a cold or you're snorting cocaine. It's one or the other. You know, so I'm going to assume that you have a cold. Unless, of course, I happen to know that you are a cokehead. But anyway, so, no. Well, then the other thing is, if your voice is harsh, and I know that you don't have a harsh voice, I will know that you have a cold. So you don't have to tell people the obvious, so to speak. You don't have to tell them the obvious. And if you begin to sneeze and do other things that may signify that you have a cold, same thing with, you know, my voice is hoarse or I can't talk that loud because I have a cold. Well, if all of those things are a distraction, then maybe you should have turned down the speaking engagement. Because if you got to get up there and if you can't talk loud enough, well, no one's going to hear you anyway. So those are kind of things that we teach in our speaking class. But I was saying all that to talk about flexibility. And flexibility, you don't have to say all that and being flexible. Here's the thing. If someone calls you at the last minute to do something, let's just say an hour, right? If someone calls me right now, it's about 7:30. If someone calls me and says, Lalisa, we need you to speak this morning at 9 a.m. And actually a woman did that. We need you to speak this morning at 9 a.m. at the blah, 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 blah. The blah, blah, blah school, company, church, women's conference retreat, doesn't matter. And that's like, you know, extemporaneous speaking where it's last minute sort of thing. If they call on me in an hour, I have an hour. That means I have an hour to prepare, right? A person might say, how in the world do I prepare a speech in an hour or a half hour or 20 minutes? Well, you've got to follow a simple rule. First of all, every speech has the same components. An opening, a middle, and a close. That's every single one. Opening, middle, close. And keep this in mind also. Whenever you are invited to speak anywhere, I don't care if it's at the White House, the governor's house, or your own house, it doesn't matter. All speaking is the same. You always have the right as a speaker. Let me make sure you understand this. You have the right, and it is very often respected if you go short, 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 length of time. Don't ever worry about what am I going to say. Whatever you say, and if you sit down, will more than likely be enough. The only problem that speakers have when it comes to length of time, there's only one problem that all speakers have when it comes to length, is that we go too long. most speakers go too long. That's our only downfall. The only thing that helps us is that most speakers do that, except while you're in Toastmasters, because you cannot go over the time because you are timed. You are trained through timing, and if you go over the time, they will actually you will disqualify yourself out of any speech contest that if you were to ever enter. No matter how great your speech is and how great a speaker you are, if you go over your time, they will disqualify you. So, but other than that, anytime you give a speech, you will never have any problems from the organizers or the audience if you go shorter. Now, don't do like this one person. We went to a graduation one time, and the graduation, all the graduates, we were waiting there for the person to, you know, of course, deliver the commencement speech. And the person was very well paid, flown in, paid thousands of dollars, probably $20,000, $30,000 to be the speaker, because it was a very well-known person, whatever, whatever. And the person spoke for like 2 minutes. Now, in my mind, that was just totally unacceptable, because we wanted to hear more. I mean, we're trying to be encouraged. We've just graduated. We need to be, you know, pumped up a little bit. So 2 minutes, in that case, too short can be an issue. But typically, too long is always the issue. It's never that the person was too short. So if you're ever called on to speak at the last minute, don't think that you have to go prepare the great American speech. Just prepare something short, short and sweet. And the way you do that, again, you got to have your opening, your middle, and your close. And the opening could simply be there. You can say what you're going to tell them. In your middle, you tell them about something, whatever you decide to talk on. Tell them about it. Just describe it to them. The ins, the outs, the ups, the downs. And then close with, well, I just told you about the way people enter relationships and how they can go bad. And I've left you with 3 things to remember. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. You know, like that. And you sit down. You know, I'll take questions. There you go. I'll take questions and have a seat. And so, you know, just wanted to let you know, don't ever worry about. So you have the format, right? An opening, a middle, and a close. That's it. That's the basic format for any speech. Now, your opening could be several things. Your opening could be a statistic. Like, for instance, 85% of girls will experience some type of abuse, sexual abuse, by the time they are age 18. 85%. That's a startling statistic. And if I was speaking to a group of people on that subject, or any subject, I could give out that statistic. Then I could, you know, go to the middle part where I begin to talk about how and why this happens and any experiences that I might have with the scenario. And then I would close with, but you can make a difference today by being aware, by helping a young girl or a teenager, and by asking questions, or by volunteering with this organization. And that will give you a nice close and you can sit down. I mean, you could do the same thing with if they ask you, if it was a hospital and they asked you to speak on health, you could talk about, you know, 75% of people who get cancer or something like that, 75% of people, you know, get cancer and survive or die. Then you could talk about how, why. Why do people get cancer? How do they get cancer? Why do they die? Why do some live? And again, close with, this is your opportunity to understand a debilitating disease that most people don't know about, blah, blah, blah. And do a nice close. So we could choose any topic and do that. Finance, same thing. You know, 90% of people do not save, have no savings account. Okay, again, why? Who? Young people, old people, rich people, poor people, who is it? Why does this happen? Well, because people were brought up to, they didn't have banks or whatever, and they passed it on to their children and their children. However you want to look at it, you could do it. So that's one way to open. Or you can open with a good quote. So, for instance, if you were doing something on you know, let's see, you could do something on almost any topic, and if you were doing something on habits, bad habits are unchecked, unchallenged, and unchanged. You were talking about habits and tying those in. So you can start with a quote, and then you can talk about what is a bad habit, how do people get bad habits, who gets bad habits, why do they get bad habits, and then you could close with, well, now that you understand the ins and outs, the ups and downs of bad habits, you are in a better position to make good habits by making choices, blah, 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 and close, and you're done. So that's I wanted to help somebody for some reason that has to speak, and it's the last minute, and you feel like you can't do it. It's very simple. You got an opening, a middle, and a close. Any topic, it doesn't matter. They give you an hour, you have an hour to prepare. If they give you 10 minutes, you got 10 minutes to prepare. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing. The best thing to do, if it's a short time, talk about something you know. No one is going to call you at the last minute and ask you to talk about something that you don't know nothing about. Nobody's going to do that, I can guarantee you. Now, your boss may call you to talk about something that they thought you knew about, but you don't because you didn't do your homework. That happens to students a lot because they don't do their homework. So the teacher may call on them to talk on something, and they don't know because they didn't study and they didn't prepare. Well, that's their fault. They should have done that. So, but no one, a boss, a preacher, anyone's going to ask you to speak on something at the last minute that you don't already have ready-made knowledge. And therefore, it's just a matter of you taking an hour, a half hour, to put together what you know. You're right. You don't have time to go do a full-fledged research, but neither do they expect that of you. Some people put themselves through undue burdens. There's no need to do that, okay? You don't have to do that. You just can think about what I'm telling you right now. If they ever ask you to speak, it's the last minute. Remember the three phases of a speech. All speeches are exactly the same. I don't care if you're speaking at the White House, the local house, the schoolhouse, the church house. It doesn't matter. I don't care if you're on Blog Talk Radio. That's why people, they're always, they act like they're so amazed. Okay, Lalisa, you know, you can come up with any topic or you can get on there and you can speak. Well, that's because I know this principle. I don't do this. It's not magic. It's not luck. It's because I know this. I've done Toastmasters. I've trained and I've studied speeches. That's what I do for a living. So I'm just sharing with you now what I've been trained. You have an opening, a middle, and a close. It's very simple. Now, your opening could be a startling statistic about your topic. It could be, now that you may have to go look up, but that's easy. You just go to the nearest computer, go to Google, and type in the word statistics about whatever topic you're doing, and boom, you got your startling statistic. Or you can use a quote, and it doesn't have to, you might say, well, whose quote should I use? Well, you could write your own quote. I'm sure you know enough about life that you can make up a few quotes here and there. Or you could use a joke, but you got to be careful with jokes, because if your joke offends anyone in the audience, you're in trouble. Okay, so don't do that. So be careful with jokes, unless you know the audience and you know what kind of jokes they respond to and what kind they laugh at. But be very careful with jokes. And even if you know the audience, stay away from anything that's racist or religious oriented, because you have different people in the crowd. You have different races there. You may have different religions there and different sexual orientations and what have you. So be very careful with jokes. I try to make, if I'm going to make jokes, I try to make jokes about myself, because that way nobody can feel like I'm talking about them. That always helps. Or a group of people that I know they're not there. I know that group isn't there, and you can kind of laugh about that. The other thing you could do, you could tell a joke, or you could do something startling. Like once I was, when I was taking this course in college in my MBA program, we had to take a public speaking class, and every time we met, we had to, every week somebody was giving a speech, like four or five of us. and then we had to critique each other. Well, one guy, his introduction was, he came out, he had on a shirt that was kind of frumpy looking, but it was okay. He got out there and he takes his shirt at the top and he snatches it open, like rips off the buttons, pop, 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 you know. And, of course, we're all startled, right? And we're like, whoa, you know. And then he jumps up on the table, you know. So, and I forget exactly what his speech was about, but I remember the activity. But that was his opening. His opening had to do with something about appearances. So underneath that, he had on a nice suit and what have you. Another person, their opening, they came out, you know, cell phones. This was back in 98, so cell phones weren't new. But remember when everyone carried a beeper? Remember the beeper? Some of y'all probably forgot about the beeper. But before everyone was carrying cell phones, I remember when they first came out, only people had cell phones were doctors because they needed to be reached right away, and they had them in their cars or what have you. And then, of course, you know, then lawyers began to get them. But the first person that I know with cell phones were doctors. And so, but, you know, everyone had beepers, you know. And that's how we communicated to someone. I remember, oh, whose number is on your beeper? And when I went to work for Continental during that time, I was working at Continental, and they gave all of us, all the employees had a beeper there. And I thought, wow, this is cool, you know. But cell phones weren't quite big yet. So, and this person, when he did his speech, he came out and he had a cell phone and he was talking on the cell phone and right as he should have been giving the speech. So, again, it caught our attention. So, in other words, I'm saying all that to say your opening, either a startling action, a startling statistic, a quote that's also startling or interesting, and or a joke that's also startling or interesting. Anything to grab the audience's attention. You know, you only have about 90 seconds to grab the audience's attention. If you don't grab their attention in 90 seconds or really connect with that audience in 90 seconds, well, you pretty much lost them for the entire speech. However, research shows that if you can grab their attention in 90 seconds, in that 90 seconds, that first 90 seconds, with that startling statistic or with a joke or what have you, or your personality coming through, if you can do that, then now you can keep them, you can keep their attention much longer, as long as you did that, in, that initial grabbing their attention. So, with that being said, again, if you have any questions, please type them into the chat room. Now, I was talking about endings. I was talking about endings, how you end a thing. Some people have been very, very bad at ending. They don't know how to end. They don't know how to end relationships. Unfortunately, some people have ended relationships in murder. Some have ended relationships not so good. They end the relationship becoming an enemy of the person that they're ending their relationships with. Some people don't end careers the right way. They don't end jobs the right way. Trust me, I know. I have direct experience with bad endings. I've ended a few things in my life, quite a few things, most things in my life. I ended those things the wrong way. And the problem with that is, it can affect your next thing that you're going to do. So your next thing, like, for instance, every ending has two sides to it. Every ending has two sides. Because every ending also has a beginning. It's the end of something, but it's always the beginning of something. Like, for instance, high school. It's the ending of high school, but it's the beginning of either a job or college. You're going to do, when you graduate high school, you're going to do one or the other. Either you're going to go get a job or you're going to go to college. That's really your only choices. Now, you could do something that people think is in the middle, which is to do nothing. Well, we can't really discuss that group. I can't really address that group. Maybe somebody else might want to do that on their show. I want to address the group that is going to get a job or go to college. One of the two. Because that's what I was taught. my mother said, no school, then you will work. Because she pretty much knew that without school you weren't going to go to college. So, you know, that's just how she thought. She was one of those parents that, you know, said, well, more than likely, if you didn't do well in school and didn't like school, you're probably not going to like college either. So for those of you who don't know, college is just more school. And so that's why some people try to encourage their children to like school so that by the time they hit 12th grade, they're not so disgusted that they don't want to see any more schooling. So you want to make school fun and lovable so that, now some people say, well, I don't care if my child goes to college or not. And I understand, that's all fine and good. Well, then make sure that they're well prepared to work, because if not, you're going to be taking care of them for the rest of your life, unless they can find a spouse. And today, most spouses today want a partner that also has an income. Not like back in the day with my grandmother and them. I mean, a woman, you know, if she didn't work, it was no big deal. Or if the man couldn't work, no big deal. The economy was such that one household could take care of everything. And, I mean, that can still happen. Don't get me wrong. It can still happen. But the person would have to have a salary of two people or a very great salary. They would definitely have to be making way over six figures, maybe even seven figures, because the economy is costly. So they would have to, so most people have to work. And unless they marry someone, and most people who marry, it's not that, you know, money is the key, but because you want things in life. And you need, like I said, in this economy today, you need two incomes, unless one person is making $200,000 or $300,000 a year. You see, so working becomes actually, and I'm sure Mr. Paul could talk about this more in his study of James Bond, but working has a certain level of attraction, you know, like when you meet, I know there are a lot of people, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, so please don't act so startled, but there are a lot of people, men and women, that will say, I don't even want to date anyone that doesn't have a job, let alone marry them. And, I mean, hey, MBK. I don't know what those initials stand for, but good morning, good morning. So I'm not sure, you know, what's happening with that. But a lot of people do want someone with a job, okay? Now, and some people really don't care what kind of job you have, but you've got to have something. We need the other income, you know, that kind of thing. You could be self-employed, not a problem. That's still working, hello. And it's a very good working to have. Both people could work in the same self-employed business. That's also fine. But I'm not going to be self-employed while you sit at home and do nothing. Now, that ain't happening, you know, unless you're taking care of the children and you're saving us $1,500 every 2 weeks on child care, that would be fine. Plus, our children are getting care by a very loving parent. You can't put a price on that. That's priceless to have your child cared for by a loving adult, like the husband or the wife. Of course, grandparents would work, but I'm just talking about spouses right now. So, ending. So some people, oh, my brother's keeper. Yay, I like it. So great, great. And what part of the country are you in? We're just curious to where people are. We know we have someone over here from Japan living in Tokyo as we speak. And I also know that we have New Jersey in the house. John Slim, I'm not quite sure what part of the world you're in, possibly Canada, but I'm not certain. I know from time to time we do have Canada in the house and Germany and California. But endings, oh, you're in the South. Okay, great. South what? South America, south of the border. No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, it's really, really interesting. Endings. Endings are very, okay. Oh, Atlanta. Okay. We just left Atlanta. Okay, Atlanta is a very interesting place. very interesting place, Atlanta, Georgia. It was good. It was hot Atlanta. It was actually hot. Good morning, good morning. We also have, always, I see we have Cleveland in the house. Cleveland, North Carolina, some great things happening in those two cities. Cleveland is a city in the state of Ohio, for those of you who never heard of Cleveland. And we have a woman there, Denise Jenkins, who is actually going to be our guest on the show on Thursday. She has helped put Cleveland on the map, y'all. Cleveland is much more well-known now because of her. And we also have South Jersey in the house. And, oh, Cleveland, okay, Denise has something to say. Good. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome, Denise.
Good morning, LaLisa, and to all your listeners. I just wanted to say hello, and I love this topic about how to, you know, present yourself and do your stories, you know, to have that opening and that body and that closing. And, you know, one of the things, as me and you have in common, we are Toastmasters. And that was a great organization to get involved in. I used to use short stories, you know, funny stories, kind of short stories to get my audience, you know, captivated about what I'm doing. And then sometimes I used to use costumes as well. I would go in, hair be standing up all over my head. They'd be like, "This, who is this?" You know, or I have one pants leg rolled up, especially if I'm doing something. I did a workshop called "You Only Get One Chance to Get to Have a First Impression," right?
Right.
And, oh, I came in and I was tore up. I had on one tennis shoe that wasn't tied up. I had my pants leg rolled up. My shirt was hanging out. My hair was a mess. I was sweating, you know, but I had poured water on my face. And they was like, okay. It was the best workshop I ever had. And then,
well, you know what?
To engage,
go ahead.
No, I said that was the best workshop I ever had. It was really funny. And I kept them engaged. You have to keep your audience engaged. Even if you have them stand up and move to another seat. You know, because it makes them a little uncomfortable, but they'll be trying to figure it out. But you got to make it relevant to what you're talking about, though. But it was good. So I just wanted to say hello and hello to all your listeners and everybody in New Jersey. And we just love you here in Cleveland, LaLisa. And we hope to see you soon, especially in April when you guys come. So that's all I had to say.
Well, wait a minute, though. But, you know, I'm so glad you did say something, because that is one of the openings that I left out, was a story. I did leave that part. I did leave that out. I gave a list of some other openings, of course, like the startling statistic, which is always really, really good, or the joke and things like that. But I did leave out the short story. So thank you for bringing that up. And, you know, they say stories are powerful to help people connect their emotions, which is a great way to keep your audience engaged when you can tap into their emotions. And so, and sometimes you can tell a story and, you know, start the story, but then finish it at the end. That also keeps people engaged. So you start the story. Now they have to stay engaged to hear the ending of the story. And that was good. And the other thing, now one question I have for you, though, Denise.
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
How do you transition, though, from that opening where your hair is standing and your face is dripping wet and your, so how do you, I mean, do you do the rest of your speech looking that way, or do you run off stage and change and play some music? How do you transition?
Well, for me, I had a towel and I wiped my face off. I let my pants lay down and I took the wig off. Because I had a wig on, so I had my hair combed back in a nice ponytail. You know what I mean? So
I didn't. That's why I had to ask. I've often wanted to do something like that, but then I couldn't figure out
how to do it.
I would get.
But you know what? They'd be laughing so hard. They laugh so hard at, you know, once you tell them what you're talking about, and then they start laughing, you know, at you because you've been laughing at yourself. And then it gives you a moment to transition and be like, okay, now let's get serious, guys. I just wanted to, you know, and then you transition
well,
like that.
I love it. Take the wig off. That's cute. Okay, I got to remember. Oh, I got to remember that one. That is so awesome. That's so awesome. So great. Thank you. And I'm glad that you're enjoying the topic. So what do you think about this other topic that I'm also intertwining here today on endings, ending?
Endings can be impactful, but for me, I always want to keep my my audience wanting. Wanting to know more, wanting to engage and research more, you know what I mean? Wanting to come up and say, you know, can you finish that? Can you do another workshop on that? So the ending for me is really impactful and important, and you never want to end it on a sad note if you can help it. You always want to encourage and empower people to move forward in your ending. So endings are very, very important because it's the place that you reiterate the beginning. Because, you know, in Toastmasters, we do that open body close, so we get a chance to restate what we restated at the first time. So we get a chance to wrap it up and all and summarize everything that we've done.
Okay, great. And now let me ask you another question about, since I'm actually kind of dealing with, you know, two topics here at once. So, I'm also talking about, you know, somebody asks you to speak at the last minute, how you can prepare a speech, whether they give you an hour or they give you a whole week or they give you a whole month. Pretty much it's definitely going to be the same process. But I was also talking about ending situations in our life. So I did talk about ending speeches as well, but when I said ending, I'm talking about ending situations in our life, like ending a marriage, ending a bad relationship, ending a career, those kind of endings.
Well, those life-changing endings, Delisa, we have to step back and reflect and see what the situation is, and we have to deal with that on a case-by-case basis because we don't want to end it badly. You know, we want to, especially with some relationships, we want to make sure that there's still room for, if not friendship, room for, at least for us to be on speaking terms. And sometimes we have to just step back because someone told me that some people are in your life for a reason, some people are in your life for a season, and some things just end that way. But in any ending, especially in a relationship, you want to make sure you come out of it safely. That's the most important thing, and that you leave that person encouraged. I really believe that even if it's not an ending that you want, still try to find the good in it. You kind of know what I mean? Find out, you know, because you were in it for some reason. Try to find that what you went in it for, and then grow from it. Because that's all we can do, But it's a case by case. It's a case. It just depends on what you're in, what you're ending. It's a case by case.
Okay. All right. So that's great. And I just want to definitely encourage those of you who are listening via the chat room. If it's your first time, as it is with MBK, we absolutely welcome you to the show. We're, you know, glad that you stopped by. And definitely, you know, connect with us here on Blog Talk Radio. We have a page where you can make your comments, and we encourage each of you to do that. A lot of people, again, they say how much they enjoy the show. Well, we appreciate that, but we also appreciate comments because, you believe it or not, those comments can help others to say, oh, I'll listen to the show as well, and they can get the things that many of you write to me and say, oh, it was a great show. Oh, I learned this, or I got that, or this was affirmed or confirmed or reaffirmed with me. And so we just encourage you, and I'll continue to encourage you to go on the website blogtalkradio.com/CoachLalisa. You know, when you get a chance, you're sitting at the computer, and just click on somewhere on the page. You have to be signed in to do this. So for those people who are in the chat room who have signed in, who possibly have an account, you can easily do it, and you'd be surprised how many more people will begin to tune into the show as well because they see that someone has made a comment and they're making it on a regular basis. But, I mean, only make the comment if you have something that you want to say that is encouraging and positive. We discourage you to say the show was whack today. No, I'm just kidding. But certainly, if that's how you feel, you're certainly welcome to share your real feelings. It doesn't mean I won't delete it, but no, I'm just kidding. But anyway, yes. So anyway, Miss Denise, so you have some great things going on. I'm not going to interview you because I know you're coming on Thursday. We want to save that for Thursday.
Ma'am. We're
but
excited, Melissa.
Who is that?
Really
coming on Thursday?
Yes, we
well,
are.
Well, you know what? Well, what some people, that they don't realize that you are Denise Jenkins in Cleveland. I used to call you Denise. Your name became to me Denise from Cleveland. That what your last name was from Cleveland. But some people, they don't know you that well, and they don't know how, you know, close we really are. And they don't realize our partnership and how we partner on so many things. And they have, but they will begin to see and how this is happening and taking place. And we're looking forward to coming to Cleveland, Ohio, with the first International Northeast Christian Writer and Publisher Convention. We're looking forward to coming there April the 30th. We're getting ready for that. And we'll be calling you later about some more details on that. Also, the public speaking, I believe there is a seminar that is going to be, remember, Denise, I'm coming to do a seminar on speaking.
Yes, you are.
Facilitating.
Yes.
And I think that's happening in May.
Mm-hmm. It's coming in May.
Oh, it's coming in May?
Yeah,
and
if your schedule allows you, because you're busy now. So we're trying to get you back here before.
Well, Denise,
and we definitely
they don't
want
know.
You here in October for our Beyond the
okay.
Beast conference.
Okay. Uh-huh. We said May. Okay. Right. But we're going, okay, Cleveland is the weekend of the 21st because that's the weekend that I'm also going to Cincinnati. So that would probably work perfectly. So I'll be going to Cincinnati that Sunday. Okay. So, yes, Beyond Abuse, right, coming in October. But I said that to say that you will be coming, you know, on the show from time to time, sharing some of the wonderful things that the Sanctuary CEC and your Legacy Builders entrepreneurial organization, where you help entrepreneurs build their business one entrepreneur at a time, the workshops that you do with that, you will be coming on to share that information. And so that's great. We look forward to that. Those were great. We were going up there for about a year, myself and Jeanette. And we've come up there a few times, and you know, it's a great ride from New Jersey. It's very short. It's only about 6 to 7 hours. You can get there in 7 hours or less, I should say, depending on how clear the traffic is. So that's always fun and exciting. You also have a new book coming out, so we're excited about that. And, you know, it's just when it comes to public speaking and when it comes to, you know, doing workshops and seminars. Now, I really, really hope that people who listen to me or listen to my show, and I really got one thing that I have to work on, and we were talking about, I even talked about branding a little bit today, and what's your brand? What is it that people know about you? What is it that people think about you? And so, and sometimes if we brand ourselves, it's hard to break away from that brand. Like, for instance, Oscar Mayer, they do hot dogs, they do bologna. If they were to decide to do a chicken McNugget, you know, an Oscar Mayer McNugget, see, it would be very hard for them to break away because the brand we know them as is bologna and hot dogs. And so you have to be very careful with, you have to learn about branding. You have to know how to change your brand and add on to your brand. So for me, I'm working on now my brand. A lot of people have branded me as I'm too busy. And so people, you know, I have to get away from that because I'm a full-time speaker. and as a full-time speaker, I'm no more busy than a person who works 60 hours at the power and light company, or people who put in 60 hours at Walmart, or people who put in, you know, 90, you know, preachers, they put in 90 hours a week or more. But people don't hesitate to call on them to preach and say, oh, they're too busy. They know that's what they do. And so I'm trying to break away from people thinking that I'm too busy, because I'm not. That's what I do. It's my full-time job is speaking. That's my full-time job. And that's my, it's not only my full-time, it's really not a job for me, it's my passion. So it's not even a job, it's my passion. It's my purpose. So it's all tied there together. My purpose is to speak to people about life-changing matters, whether it be, like for instance, today I will be speaking down in Freehold, New Jersey. I will actually be doing an interview on sexual abuse. And then, that's today. What am I talking about? In a few hours. Then tonight, I will be doing a workshop on how to build up your self-esteem to a group of women. And this is not too much for me because this is my life, time. And you see this morning, we're here. And then tomorrow, Wednesday, we'll do our class and all of that, and I forget what else we have on Wednesday. And then Thursday, I will go to New York to the Church with No Walls, where Apostle Dr. Tanya Blount is the pastor, and I will be preaching there. And we have a special guest singer will be singing. We'll show you the video later. We're going to surprise you. We'll tell you who she is, but you. Her name is Yasmin, and she's awesome, awesome, awesome speaker. I'm a singer and probably speaker too. We're going to see clips of her because we got to make sure we videotape her singing and put that on Facebook for you. So she will be singing. And then on Friday, believe it or not, and so this is not too much for me because this is what I absolutely do. Then Saturday, I will be speaking at a homeless shelter in New Jersey to empower them, and I'll do an opening, a middle, and a close, and the opening I'll give some startling statistic about how many powerful, successful people started out homeless. So many people. Tony Robbins came to the United States homeless, and many, many other Miss Dani Johnson, a millionaire, she started out homeless. So many, 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 many people were homeless, and they went on to do great and mighty things. So that will happen on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we will be at myself, author Deborah Davis. She's the author of My Daddy's a Devil and Me, and also Deborah Dates, who is the owner of Yes, MBK, you can absolutely give it to me. And then there's Deborah Dades. She also has a healing and outreach program that she does with women that are suffering from things like cancer and what have you that need to be healed and need to be loved. And the three of us will be speaking at a women's history and health program on Sunday at 4 o'clock. And then we'll start all over again on Sunday. Don't forget Sisters in the Spirit this Sunday at 6. And so the saga will continue. But that's what happens when you walk in your passion. You don't get tired of it. It's not too much. You look to do it. Oh, Patricia, I didn't want you to do that. But that's okay. I didn't want to tell them. I wanted them to be surprised when they saw her, but that's okay. The people on the phone, they can't see what you just typed in the chat room. So only the people in the chat room can see. But that's why I said I just told them their name because I wanted to be a surprise when they see the video of the person who is going to sing me in, so to speak. She's going to sing before I preach, and I can't wait. But yes, that's so, so awesome. So if those of you were, if you were on the phones, if you were in the chat room, you would know now a little bit more about this awesome, awesome singer. She is very special, very grandiose, very, very good singer. So that is what, okay, great. And so Patricia is going to write that down, blogtalkradio.com/MBK1. And we're going to investigate that later. So, yes, yeah, so we have the TV taping today. We're going to talk about that. And then on April the 5th, I will be down at Seton Hall University. I believe it's a program that's open to the public. I don't know. It might be. I will ask her. But I will go down. Some of you heard me. I've talked to you privately about my experience in Atlanta, Georgia, because I was so astounded by it. Over this past weekend, I was there from Friday to Sunday. Well, I left out Sunday, and I was in a hotel with a situation that caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting it, but nonetheless, it happened, and I couldn't figure out. I kept saying, God, you know, why did this happen? Why did I meet these individuals? And then yesterday, I received an email from a woman at Seton Hall University asking me to speak on human trafficking and prostitution in the United States. So, putting two and two together, but, you know, I should know that because, you know, God, everybody, you know, God works with everybody a little bit differently and sometimes similar, you know, and all of that, but he often gives me hands-on examples, hands-on experience, so. Because while I was in Atlanta, I seemed to pick up on a situation that might have been some type of prostitution ring or human trafficking ring or something. Maybe not human trafficking, but something similar. And this happened, and now I can see why. At first, I couldn't figure out why I was meeting these individuals, why this was being shown to me, why I was picking up on this, and now being invited to speak on this topic. Now, because basically I was doing research because I was talking to these people and asking them questions. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm thinking I'm just being Lalisa. But, you know, it really is true that your gift will make room for you. And, you know, when you look at people and you look at their talents and the things that we don't even believe is a talent, you know, recognize that God did not make any mistakes in making us and developing us and grooming us, and our experiences are not haphazard. They all are a part of God's plan for your life. And so, while, you know, my ability to talk a lot and to anybody stands me good because I was able to talk to these individuals and get a lot out of them, and now I'm going to be speaking on this very topic. And one of the things they want me to talk about are my own experiences. So I thought, wow, how cool is that? That I'll have up-to-date stuff, not just, well, 30 years ago, I was a prostitute. I have up-to-date information that I can share with the student body there. So anyway, I just, you know, it's just phenomenal. It's just, look at your life, you know. We were talking yesterday about defining your life, defining your life. You define it, and you can embrace your life and let go. But one thing I will say to people, you will never, ever become, listen to me good, hear this really good. Some people want to become all that they are meant to be. Right? That's in the book, Release Your Power, 8 Strategies for Becoming Who You Really Are. Many people have books about reaching your fullest potential and, you know, living your, some of you are very familiar with Joel Osteen's book, Living Your Best Life Now. And there, Pastor Joel Osteen's of the pastor of that big church down there in Houston. And lots of other people have books, you know, Les Brown wrote a book years ago, Live Your Dreams, and you know, Don't Die in the Wilderness, and many, many books about becoming who you really are. And Abraham Maslow, we know he did this whole teaching about self-actualization and living up to your fullest potential in life. But one thing I've learned and I've seen, and I'll say it again and I've said it before, is that you will absolutely never become all that you're supposed to be, as long as you desire to be what someone else is. God can't work like, he doesn't work like that. You know, he can't, you know, do for you, and you're just, because, you know, he told us, you know, not to covet, don't envy what others have. So we would never be all that we're supposed to be, all right? But whatever it is that God, you know, but whatever it is for you to be, you can become the best in that. Now, it doesn't say that you can't do things that others are doing. Obviously, millions of people have written a book, so we're not going to say, well, you can't write a book because someone else has done that. Come on. No. You can write a book, start a business. And here's another thing, too. I just found this out. It's so funny how you learn things just by keep living. My grandmother used to say that, but I see why. She would say, just keep living. Well, guess what? You can write a book on the exact same topic that someone else has wrote a book on. Well, because you're going to have a different perspective. You're not going to say what they said. And persons cannot copyright, you know, you can't copyright a common principle or theme. You know, it's a common thing to live your best life. That's very common, living your fullest potential and all of that. So, you know, you can't copyright that. You can't copyright, you know, 12 steps to a new you, because that's so common. Anyone can come up with that. You can, you know, you would have to do something totally, totally unique in order to patent a title of a book, like put the letters upside down, you know, and the word still spells something backwards and all that old stuff. You could do, but, you know, common titles you cannot copyright. It's just a common thought that anyone could have, because therefore you can never prove that you created that. If anyone can have that same thought on any given day, then you can't copyright it, okay? So just so that people know that who are skeptical about doing a topic that someone else is doing, you know. And even when it comes to, you know, sermon topics. Now, if a person comes up with a sermon topic that is, you know, so unique that they created it out of the belly of their creativity. But if you're just talking about, for instance, the flood that, you know, wiped out the land in Noah's day. I mean, you know, like if you come up with a topic like, is there a flood in your life? I mean, anybody can come up with a topic like that. Okay. But, you know, you'd have to make it a lot more unique in order to do that. So, yes, we're winding down. We were expecting somebody else to come on, and I thought we would have lots more, you know, conversation about that. So that person is not here. Also, we know some people couldn't stay the whole hour and a half. And part of the show being extended has to do with my schedule having changed, not having to rush out of the house to go to clock in somewhere. But I am working with a project in Jersey City. I am directing a program there, but it's a program of my passion. It's a program where women are transitioning, so they have an ending, and they're going on to something new. So every ending in that sense, not necessarily from a speaking perspective, but endings in life. There's also with the ending a beginning. So there's a new beginning. Every ending is also a beginning, okay? So even whether it's a divorce, it could be a death, it could be an ending of a job. So while, yes, we're going to be sad and go through that part of the transition, the loss, the grief, the change, we're also going to have some excitement, some joy, some, you know, a little mystery there, because we're starting something new. Every ending, there's, if you're ending a divorce, then you're starting a new life as single. If you're ending, you know, you were with someone, you were alone, so I mean, you were with someone all your life, and now you have to be alone or without that person, that's a beginning of what is it like to be alone? What is it like to be by yourself, what do you need to do differently? Well, it's a beginning, too. And with every beginning, you have some excitement, maybe some apprehensiveness. With a beginning, there's always a newness, something new. Sometimes because it's new, it can be an eye-opener. It could be something that brings us, you know, some, you know, we get a little excited about it because it's new. We're not sure what to expect. We have some expectations. We're waiting for the new thing to happen. And that's always good. So keep in mind that also, as you begin something, realize that that thing may not always be there. Okay, think about that for a minute. It may not always be there, so you can prepare yourself along the way for how you're going to transition, you know, to the end. So you have this beginning, it's exciting, it's new, and then you come to this middle. Almost like with a speech, in a sense, beginning, middle, and end. Everything has beginning, middle, and end. The beginning of your life, you were born, and all of your life is the middle, and then there is going to be an ending. What is happening in this middle? Sometimes in the middle, we get comfortable, we get complacent, we get to the status quo, we get used to things and not want them to change. We get stuck in this middle, okay? And then when the things end, sometimes we don't know how to accept it. So I like to always be in the state of, because it's like in a state of balance where I'm trying to keep, yeah, I'm in the middle, but I don't want to get too status quo. I don't want to just be mediocre. You know, always looking to do something new, be creative. Look for new ways to do things that you've been doing all your life. It's like with food, you know. It's like, how many ways can you cook rice? Okay, you can have plain white, it can be brown, it can be rice pilaf, you could put broccoli in your rice, you could stuff the rice inside of meatloaf. I mean, there's a lot of things. So same thing with your life. You could take something that is standard and that's always there and just constantly add new things to it. Now, we're about to have big, big fun because we have finally empowered ourselves to move into that realm of, it's about being self-employed, but it goes deeper than just self-employment. I know some people are just happy with being self-employed and not having a boss. But it actually goes deeper than that, okay? Self-employment it can go very, very deep. And, you know, it's a place where real empowerment can take place. I mean, you can be empowered on the job. You know, companies can give you some power to make decisions and to be accountable and responsible for your work, your projects, the departments that you may manage, the people that you may be in a team with. But when you're self-employed, you can go much deeper in the whole empowerment scenario. Really, I mean, really. It's like empowerment on steroids when you are self-employed. And the finance piece, this is funny, I'm learning this as I'm going along, so I'm sharing with you. Some of you know that Monday, yesterday, marked my first full day as being self-employed. And what that means, I have to go out and I have to find my income. Whereas on the job, you go find a job and then you just work and wait on an income. Okay, pretty much, and so most people who've had jobs know this. There are days that you can go on the job, and I know I did it, and I'm sure others have too, that you can go on the job, and you will get paid whether you do any work or not. Now, when I was in the military is where I first learned that. When I was in the military, we would go to our base or wherever we worked, and we could sit in the shop all day. A plane could not go down. I was a jet mechanic. The plane could not go down. There's no mechanical problems. So we could sit in the shop all day, basically chatting, playing cards, you know, hiking on each other before we knew it was called hiking, making jokes, visiting people in the other shops. We could do that all day for like a month. as long as our planes were running properly. It was not a problem. We still got our paycheck on the 1st and the 15th of every month. It was never an issue, okay? Because as long as the planes were up and running, it was nothing to do. You know, until certain days came when we had to do a 42-day on the plane, or we had to do what they call a 360-day inspection. Then we had to work, and then you worked, you know, for maybe a week straight. You had something to do to inspect every part of the plane that we were responsible for. And I was a part of the department that we were responsible for, the ejection seat and the canopy that has to blow off before the pilot can eject in case the plane has malfunctioned. And so those are scheduled maintenances that we knew when they were coming, and so of course we would work during that time. But any other, at the given time, as long as that plane is running smoothly, there was absolutely nothing to do. Well, there are jobs like that where, let's just say you work as a security guard, and your job is to monitor a screen or something, just watch a screen. Well, as long as no one's in there stealing or anything, you're not doing anything. You're just sitting there, and you're still getting paid, right? You'll still get a paycheck at the end of the week. Same thing with a customer service type job. You can sit there on the phones. If nobody calls, you don't have anything to do for that hour, but sit there. You will still get your paycheck. Well, in self-employment, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as sitting there and still getting paid, for the most part. Unless, of course, you know, you're an author and you wrote the book and you're selling it online, and even while you're asleep, a person could go online and buy your book. So you can still make money even though you're not doing anything. So there is that. There is that. However, and right now, the place that I'm at and some other people, you have to go and make, but you still have to go. Even with, you know, being an author, you still have to promote yourself. So you still have to do something to connect with your customer. Some way you have to find your customer, connect with that customer. Versus on the job, they have another department, the sales department. They go and connect with the customer and bring that customer in, and now you may service the customer. So these are the individuals. These are some of the ways to get paid. And you have to go and make it happen, you know, each and every day. But and that was not me blowing. That was someone in the studio blowing their nose, in the virtual studio. But so, yes, you can. There is a way that you have to, as a self-employed person, that's why you really want to make sure your employee doing something you love, because you have to go out and get these customers. You have to go out and get these customers. And so I want you to think about that as you go throughout your week. If you're self-employed, remember you have to go and get your customers. If you have to speak last minute or not, you have the opening, the beginning, and the opening, the middle, and the close. If you are a person in transition, you've come to the end of a thing, remember that it is also the beginning, but do take time to celebrate the end. Don't just dismiss it. It happened for a reason. Endings are real. They have meaning. They have value. Reflect on the ending. Enjoy it. Savor it. Because once the beginning comes, now you're on to something new. And you don't want your life to just fly by like that. So you want to embrace your endings. Okay? Take time with it. We'll see you back here shortly. Tomorrow, Mr. Versi Walker will be on the show. Don't forget, call in 347-945-7991. Tell all your friends where they can tune in for morning motivation, inspiration, empowerment, and real talk right here on Coach Lalisa. Been great. It's been real. And you've got to keep moving on up. You don't have a choice but to go higher. This has been Coach Lalisa.
Thank you for tuning in to another segment of the Coach Lalisa Show. Well, we hope you learned something. Now your challenge is to go and apply the tips, tools, or strategies that you have learned here today. And don't forget to invite a friend. Share the knowledge. Share the love. Share the wealth with everyone. Well, we are honored that you were here with us today for this 30-minute segment. The Coach Lalisa Show can be heard right here on Blog Talk Radio every morning, Monday through Friday, at 7:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's been great. It's been real. It's been awesome. And you got to keep moving on up, because in reality, there ain't nothing stopping you now. You are on the move. And this has been Coach Lalisa J. Williams.